Hello and welcome back to the Villa Filler podcast. I'm here as always with my good friend Dan Wiseman. Dan, busy weekend from the both of us, as has been the case quite a lot recently, mate, but a great weekend nevertheless for both of us, and especially for Villa fans, because that was quite an important win, I feel like, mate. Aston Villa 4, Nottingham Forest 2. Definitely didn't go as we maybe expected after the first 20 minutes, even 40 minutes of football in that game. But nevertheless, that was a massive game, wasn't it? That was a massive result.
Absolutely, mate. Good win for the Villa. Good win for Villa fans. But it was a great weekend for Villa players in general, both new and old. There was a really fun kind of 24 hours over on the opening day of the new MLS season, where kind of everywhere you looked, it was a blast from the past. Christian Benteke got a hat-trick for DC United against the New England Revolution. It was a game in which Carles Hill actually scored for Revolution as well. So that was like a crazy game. But then the big shout-out goes to Dino, who got his first win with Charlotte FC, got a dub at the first time of asking over New York City FC. So shout-out to you, Dino. I believe it was like 60,000 in attendance as well for that game. Charlotte, so just some like really lovely storylines, and I think, you know, of all of them, I think we've got to keep an eye on how Dino gets on stateside. So I think it's a really nice job for him. We were both quite keen on it at the time, obviously trying to kind of resurrect his own career after a relegation with Leicester. So yeah, on the whole, mate, it felt like a proper heartwarming weekend to be an Aston Villa fan.
It did, mate, it did. I love the Dino, I love the Charlotte story. That's great. I mean, they're only 3 years old, Charlotte, as well, so to be drawing 60,000, mm-hmm, it's remarkable.
Yep.
And I've actually got a plug who could potentially put us in touch with Dean Smith, mate. So I'm working on trying to get Dino on the filler. I'm working, you know, I've scratched someone's back. I got dog on an interview, and they're going to scratch my back, hopefully getting us in with Dino. So hopefully we've got that to look forward to at some point soon. That'd be good to get an exclusive with Dino and hear how he's doing, because I mean, what a crazy life he will have now. You know, he'll be traveling here, there, and everywhere. That's really interesting. But we're not here to talk about MLS, unfortunately. You know, I do that enough in my day job. We are here to talk about Aston Villa and this. There was a few. You know, I think I want to start with Ollie Watkins, because there was a few comments, as I sort of expected and sort of preempted with my sort of statement and how I thought Ollie is. I mean, definitely the greatest striker at Aston Villa in my lifetime, but even, you know, of all time. He was so good, man. He was so good. Him and Leon just have this connection. And I believe he's only... There was a stat floating around about goal involvements in a single season, and I think he's only like three off Dwight York. And when you consider that we've got 12 games left to play, that's absolutely insane. And obviously you guys, who were alive to sort of enjoy and appreciate Dwight York, you know, there was quite a few of them in the comments of the last podcast saying that he probably is Aston Villa's greatest ever striker. But Ollie's like this close to matching his best ever season. So what does that make Ollie? I mean, it's a discussion that, again, we'll let you guys have in the comments, because I can't really offer too much considering I haven't really seen Dwight York. But this is a man who is just in fine form, mate, and you know, whether it's a tap in or whatever, it doesn't matter. Leon Bailey really made this first goal though, didn't he, mate? He is on absolute smoke. We've been hearing the whole week in the build up, mate, about this Murillo, about how he's world class, about how he's better than Pau Torres from all the Forest fans. And he gets cooked in the fourth minute. Absolutely cooked, mate. It was a wonderful goal, the perfect start off to the game, really, wasn't it?
Mate, is this Leon Bailey redemption arc possibly the best storyline of all this season for Villa? I'm inclined to say yes. He has proved us all wrong. And, well, you know what? I don't know if it's so much proving us all wrong.
I think he's proved us right.
Yeah, I think it's more perhaps proving the fan base right, because we all knew there's a player there. He's just not really been able to show it. And I think it was kind of coming to a real crunch time for Leon at the start of this season, but he's just been incredible. And yeah, just a massive, you know, he obviously put pen to paper on that new contract just a few weeks ago, and he's really backed that up. And just, if he hadn't already, kind of prior to signing that deal, he's really vindicated, like, just how he's one of the, no, I believe, one of the highest paid players in the squad. And on the pitch, he is making that known. He's been absolutely incredible. That connection with Ollie Watkins is more than well documented. I don't think any two players have combined for more goals this season in the Premier League than their six. Ollie Watkins and Leon Bailey are a duo to be feared right now. But yeah, I mean, where do you start with either of them, really? Ollie is just, he's really kind of made this his kind of trademark. Now, he doesn't really get involved with the game as right. much as he used to. He's actually, I think if you look at the fewest touches, yeah, I've got the stat here. So the fewest touches per shot in the Premier League this season, he ranks 9.5 touches per shot in the Premier League, which is John Duran, very interestingly, is also next. So he's 9.1. And you've got Rodrigo Muniz of Fulham at 8.3, Darwin Nunez at 8, and then Erling Haaland, who's probably the master of only popping up when there's a chance, gets a shot off every 5.4 touches in the Premier League. So when you can kind of put him into that kind of category, the kind of traits which I think a few seasons ago we really credited Ollie for, which was his ability to play in the wide areas, you know, how he would always run the channels, he would chase balls down, he was excellent at hold-up play. Those things which were probably the standout parts of his game just a few years ago, you know, if you wind it back to the 7-2 win against Liverpool, for example, and the goal he scored in that game where he picks up the ball basically right on the touchline on the left-hand side, almost at the halfway line, and dribbles basically at the entire Liverpool back line. I think it takes Van Dijk one-on-one and then puts one in the top corner. That was kind of the archetypal, that was the pinnacle of what Ollie Watkins could be a few seasons ago. But how he's kind of changed his game under Unai Emery to stay very centrally, only get involved in the game at the most crucial points, has just seen him hit an entirely new level of productivity. And he, you know, it's only really now I think you realize just how good of a player he is, because he's clearly got both games in him and he's adapted so well to this new gaffer, a style of play that was so different to what he was being asked to do under Dino, which is probably when we saw the best of him. It kind of was a bit iffy under Steve Gerrard, but most players were. I think if you compare what he was being asked to do under Dino, under Unai, it's so different, but he's excelled in both roles. But just under Unai, he's just hit a new level. And you're running out of superlatives at this point for him, really.
Yeah, I mean, it makes you wonder what his ceiling really is, doesn't it? I think it's fair to say at this point he is one of, if not our most indispensable player. I think there's been a lot of debate recently, and you know, we even sort of mentioned in the last podcast, didn't we, in the preview, like, Dougie and Ollie, like, who do you sell if you have to? And it's like, well, ideally neither, because they're both, like, they're the spine. I think they really are. And, you know, like, today, it was 2 days ago, but, like, the game against Forest, it, like, as much as we do miss Boubacar Kamara when he's not playing, you know, we've shown that we can sort of play without him. So, you know, should he be, you know, a casualty to FFP or whatever, then, like, I think you'd be able to stomach that, but you just can't go out and replace Ollie Watkins. The goals he gets, you know, as you rightfully said the other day, mate, he's, you know, third within the top five of all strikers for goal contributions in the entirety of Europe. And that was omitting guys like Victor Osimhen. You know, so many great strikers weren't in that top five. You would either have to go and buy someone like Victor Osimhen or any of the other forwards in that top five, which included like Haaland, Mbappe, Harry Kane, which just isn't viable either. So like this notion that like you can replace him and everything would be fine, I just don't agree with. Like I could see there being a player that Unai and Monchi are looking at maybe in Spain or in another European league that could step up eventually. But in terms of like, if you had, you know, guns to your head, you have to sell Ollie Watkins tomorrow and bring in a striker to sort of replace him, you would have to spend upwards of £100-120 million, which is exactly what we'd get for Ollie as well, really, if we're being realistic at this point. Yeah. You can't just go out and, like, I'm all for like Unai unearthing gems and Monchi unearthing gems, but like Ollie Watkins at the moment is how Aston Villa score goals, is how Aston Villa wins games, and is indispensable.
I think, you know, it's really interesting. Like if we, in some crazy world, right, signed Victor Osimhen, it's not going to happen. But say if we did, and by February, he had 24 goal contributions in the Premier League, you would absolutely say, yeah, nailed on, one of the best players in the world. I don't think you can really ignore what Ollie is doing. I don't think if any of those players came to Villa that they would necessarily be able to do kind of what he's able to do in this team. He is just fantastic. And it's really interesting one with Ollie because, you know, I'm sure we'll get onto to guys like Guinea and stuff who were excellent in this game. Let's be real, Ollie Watkins has never had 100% of the Villa fan base. Never. There have always been sections of the fan base that have been a little bit iffy about him, sections of the fan base that perhaps at certain points thought we could improve. There have been sections of the fan base where it was a conversation with Danny Ings and everything like that. And we have all been there at some point in Ollie Watkins' timeline at Villa when there have been goal droughts and stuff like that, where, you know, he's gone 8 or 9 games without a goal. It's not been easy for Ollie. And as a result, I've never really felt like, you know, if you surveyed the match-going Villa Park fan base on Saturday as to their thoughts on Emi Martinez, as to their thoughts on John McGinn, you would get a 100% approval rating. You absolutely would. But Ollie Watkins, I don't feel, has ever had that. And I think it's really important because I also feel that there's some kind of revenge story to him where, and I think you can see it sometimes in his celebrations and everything like that, where he knows sometimes there's been a little bit of perhaps unwarranted chatter. And I feel like he's finally really starting to put his foot down and be like, yeah, I'm the guy. And he really is. He really is. Ollie Watkins, you know, no player in the Premier League has more goal involvements than him this season. I know it's kind of Haaland's been out and stuff like that, but he could well do that and maintain that until the end of the season. And if he does, when was the last time, if ever, an Aston Villa player did that? I just think he's kind of absolutely exceptional. There's no stopping him right now. But yeah, I think we do have to kind of wake up to the fact that he's never had a totally unified fan base behind him. And I think he's starting to get that now, and he absolutely deserves it.
Yeah, man, absolutely. Same with Dougie Luiz as well. Gets a brace, almost a hat trick. Open play goals this time as well. Seen a few more of them from Dougie recently. Obviously, he's been on penalties. And I think it's just a credit to like how patient I think we are being in our build-up play. You know, we're seeing, so like with the, I think it was the first Dougie goal, you know, we sort of made 2 or 3 passes inside the 18-yard box before Dougie was able to get his shot away. You know, there was a couple of cutbacks here and there that were involved in that. And that just sort of goes to show the real confidence that these players have in themselves right now and the sort of the patience and the ability as well. JJ obviously gets the assist for that one as well. I thought the hold-up play from him was really good, and he seems to be getting better and better each week. But Douglas Luiz is just, he's in his own category, mate. He's just a different gravy, isn't he? Like, it's genuine, like, you know, again, to sort of, don't want to talk about players that I didn't necessarily see play for Villa, but Douglas Luiz has to be, if he isn't the best Villa midfielder that we've had at the club, he certainly has to be within the conversation.
He's the exception, mate. He is the best player at the football club. He is my favourite player at the football club. There is nothing that he can't do. He is a genuine privilege to get to watch him play football on a regular basis when he's playing like he did yesterday. He is so important to what we do. He is so well suited to what we do. The kind of methodical build-up is just perfect for his game. If you look at, I think AVFC Stato, actually, I'm going to shout him out because he pulls out some fantastic numbers. In terms of most Premier League goals in a single season at Villa Park for the club, he has 9 so far this season. The record are the names that we've been speaking about so far in this podcast, mate. Dwight York has 11, Benteke has 11, Angel with 10, and then York again with 10. So you imagine that he's going to at least level or surpass Angel in one of York's seasons, 95-96. But who's to say he can't end this season? If he gets kind of above double figures for home goals scored in the Premier League, like, wow, what's
crazy.
He's just incredible. He is absolutely fantastic. Yeah, my favourite player at the club by a mile. I think it's just, we are so, so fortunate to be able to watch him on a regular basis and to kind of have, and this isn't playing down his ability, but he's such a, if he's eating, we're all eating kind of player. Like, if you've got guys like, I said this about in the other episode about Tielemans, like, if you can get your centre midfielders getting up into, like, low to middle double-figure goal contributions for a season, you are in such a good place. You are in such a good place. Like, when he's pitching in and you're getting, like, one of my 10, 11 goal contributions just at Villa Park in a season from someone like Douglas Luiz. It lifts a burden off everybody else. I think you can't underestimate what a role that is playing in guys like Bailey and the season that he's having. Even Watkins, knowing that despite being the main man, you can rely on Dougie. Dougie getting a brace in games like this is just fantastic. And it's when you're seeing players like him get two goals in a game, the feel-good factor it just puts around Villa Park, how much he just enjoys his connection with the fan base. When he's getting up there and banging in headers in front of the whole 10, like, what can't this guy do? He's just exceptional, man.
That's the thing. It's the variety, isn't it? Like, we've spoken about the penalties. We're speaking about the tap-ins, and I'm being very broad with that use there. But then the fact he's popping up with headers, he's getting in between centre-halves and winning headers. Give this man the keys to the city. Give them to him. He deserves them. Absolutely. It was a bit frustrating, though, after that, wasn't it, mate? Just temporarily, because, you know, we let Forrest back in literally almost with the final kick of the first half from a set piece, which is, again, something where we just seem to struggle defending, at least. Niakate had a gaping goal to deal with after the flick-on that was made to him. I think it was flicked on from Taiwo Iwuanyi. It was a frustrating one because we could have at that point been about four or five up. We could have had a couple more goals easily. And to concede right before half time, you're giving Forest the belief that they can get back into this game, which is something they did a minute after the second half kicks off. And it's less than ideal with the substitutions, the changes, bringing Pau Torres off. And it's not a slight on Callum Chambers at all because, as you guys know, absolutely adore the guy. But things changed, and it's funny because we didn't actually have, they had kickoff, we didn't touch the ball until we picked it up from the back of the net, did we, for that second goal. Gibbs White, which again, fantastic finish from Morgan Gibbs White, just absolutely seemed to ghost through our midfield though. And at that point, mate, it's 3-2 and you're thinking we've possibly just watched the best half of football that we have played in the Unai Emery era. And all of a sudden now, we've been pegged back twice within 2 minutes.
It just shows the kind of... There is that side to Villa. There is that side to Villa with all these injuries and stuff like that. There is that kind of... Once one or two kind of go in like that, especially from set pieces and stuff like that, that's only the side of a game that we need to kind of clear up. But... yeah, it's funny. I think you have to give so much credit to Forest, really, like, for that kind of fight back, considering I think since they got promoted, they've only won 3 of their 32 away games since they've been back in the Premier League. And so to kind of show that level of, like, kind of fight back, and it really did look for a little bit like it was touch and go, you got to give them a lot of credit, I suppose. But yeah, those are the kind of things that we need to tidy up. And look, I'm not massively concerned by it because, as you rightly say, it's a very changed back line. Powell comes off, Cal comes on and stuff like that. And yeah, it's ultimately a very well taken, a very well constructed goal, the Morgan Gibbs White finish. But yeah, you do that kind of game management and, you know, it's probably a product of being kind of 3-0 up and everything like that. We just have to kind of maybe, we had it really well at points. We were able to see games out really nicely. I think with set pieces and stuff like that, that's maybe got a little bit right. So if we can just pull that in, that would be good. But I do think that's where you miss guys like Booba and stuff like that, who can be that physical presence, who can kind of sit in front of a back line, marshal defences and hopefully try and kind of see games out a little bit easier. But I mean... yeah, the Niakate one, you can definitely do something about. I think ultimately, you kind of, you know, if you can see the goal like the Morgan Gibbs White one, you've kind of got to take it on the chin. It's a great finish. But yeah, set pieces, something to get on top of.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. And I think, like, the thing is as well, Forest did change things up. Like, they brought Iwuanyi off. They put Origi on instead, but then they sort of played him on the wing to kind of occupy Moreno, and they gave Alanga a bit more of a free role. So whilst they didn't necessarily have a focal point up front, they only for about 10 or 15 minutes really did they do this. They were actually sort of playing those balls up to Origi on the wing to give Moreno something different to think about. And I mean, after that, we obviously brought Dean on and didn't really cause us too many issues, if we're being completely honest. Leon Bailey obviously gets his goal to sort of seal it. And we're talking about a fantastic afternoon, aren't we, mate? It's just, it's everything that you could want. And it's only made sweeter by the result at Old Trafford, isn't it?
Yeah, well, this is the thing, mate. This is the thing. Like, you've got, again, as there kind of was last weekend, it was very important to capitalise on Wolves' win at Spurs when we got that 2-1 win at Craven Cottage. And again, this week, you know, you kind of have the same thing with Fulham involved once again, going taking points off, 3 points off Man United. And you kind of realise that how quickly things can change, because a few weeks ago in the Premier League, we were looking down. We were looking at Hans Spurs' catch list. You know, they had a nice... Richarlison was very much in the goals. James Maddison was coming back. It was all looking like Spurs could really refine their mojo and they could be the threat. And then United got that big win against us and they really kind of entered the frame. And in just a couple of weeks, all of a sudden, we're looking upwards again. You know, Spurs are only 5 points behind us, albeit they do have a game in hand. So that could close, but we're only ourselves 6 points behind the likes of Arsenal. So again, you really do have to just take care of yourself. And I know that's very hard to do when you're in a race for something like the Champions League. But as long as you take care of your business, which it was very important to do during what was a run of favourable fixtures, I think it's fair to say before, yeah, I mean, obviously we'll come on to it in a second, but the Conference League draw and the size of that game and the Spurs game falling in between those two European fixtures before games against West Ham, Wolves, City, Brentford, Arsenal. With this kind of run post Man United through to the next game against Luton, we really had to go through that and get 9 points. And so 6 out of 6 so far, if we can go to Kenilworth Road and get another 3 there, which we'll preview this week, it's perfect. And that's all you can do, mate, is just make sure that you go into games and wherever you can take 3 points. And these two games, particularly this one at Villa Park, we knew that we had to come out on the winning side of. And to do it so convincingly, by and large, obviously there was that 15-minute wobble, was really important then.
It was. And, you know, there's been all this talk about Manchester United being back and they're going to get that fourth place spot and Villa are going to slip out and it's going to be, you know, it's going to be Manchester United are back, Jim Ratcliffe, Ineos, all that. It's great. They've played us twice in the last 3 months. They've beaten us twice and they're still 8 points behind us. If that doesn't tell you how good we're doing, I don't know what is, mate. I don't know what will. Like, we've been absolutely fantastic and it needs to be acknowledged, especially by the sort of wider press as well. But you touched on it there, mate. Europa Conference League draw, Ajax, Amsterdam. It's the team I wanted, I can't lie. It is the team I wanted. You want a big guy to, you know, hopefully knock on wood, you beat them, you advance. That gives you the belief that you can go the whole way and win the whole damn thing. And I don't want to get ahead of myself. You know, Ajax have had a better second half of the season than they have first half. They seem to have found their feet a little bit more in the Eredivisie. However, this is a team that we should be dispatching of fairly, fairly easily.
I think, you know, when you said the perfect team, mate, I really think it is, because they aren't the Ajax of even a couple of seasons ago, really. They have fallen so far since that great Erik ten Hag side that made it all the way to the Champions League semi-finals. They eat through the last round, the kind of playoff round of the Conference League against Bodø/Glimt, who aren't the minnows that they perceive them to be. They are a fantastic side. They beat Roma 5-0 in European competition just a couple of seasons ago. They're a really good side that play some really good football. But in both games, Bodø/Glimt went down to 10 men. They got a 2-2 draw at home before they eked a 2-1 away. Both sides went back down to 10 men and they kind of went through by the skin of their teeth, really. It required a winner in extra time from Kenneth Taylor at the 114th minute to get them through in that round. And so they came off the back of that game and then they lost 2-0 away to AZ Alkmaar, who are obviously a team that we know all about, having played them twice in the group stages. And so, yeah, they're not in a great place at the moment. There's obviously that added element of Jordan Henderson being the new captain of this Ajax side. And so, yeah, when you talk about the perfect side, they will have all of that pedigree of, the deserved pedigree. They are a European giant. They are one of the most iconic teams in world football. A win against Ajax is never a bad result. you know, you never want to say that there's a good time to play and go and play a side like Ajax, but there are better times than others, and this definitely is one of those. But it will have that galvanizing effect, no matter what kind of Ajax team this is. It will, you know, a win there, a win away particularly, will always have that galvanizing impact. It will always be going to Amsterdam and get a win against Ajax. Will just, it could be the rocket that we needed to really get start our European campaign, which, despite topping our group, and I don't know, I kind of talk about taking this Villa team for granted, you can't really underestimate the kind of progress. We've won all but one of our group games so far in the Conference League, but we haven't seen the same form that we haven't seen in the league. I think if you can go and play really good football against a side like Ajax, particularly in that away leg, and then welcome them back to Villa Park, just either side of that Spurs game as well, mate, just what a 2 weeks that has the potential to be for this football club.
It's going to be difficult, mate. It's going to be difficult, but I think it's doable. I think it's doable. And it's everything you want, right? It's a massive club, as you say. Like, I hope them boys got goosebumps when they saw the draw, when they knew who they were facing. And I just can't help but think of John McGinn and the journey that he's been on. And, I mean, it doesn't look like Ty will be sort of around for the game, but the fact that John McGinn, 6 years ago, signed from Hibernian, £2.5 million, and he's going to be captaining this same Aston Villa side at the Johan Cruyff Arena in a knockout European game. If you'd have told him that 6 years ago, he'd have laughed you out of Birmingham, mate. He would have absolutely laughed you out of Birmingham. But here we are. It's the situation we're in. It's pretty crazy. And I think, we need to acknowledge how far we've come as a club in such a short amount of time, because it's absolutely crazy that we're in this position and we're fighting for Champions League qualification as well. We're doing the most, man. We're doing the most.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, well, there was really nice teams in that draw. I think as a fan base, we were praying it wasn't Maccabi Haifa, but there's still some really interesting draws to come as well. But I don't want to get too ahead of ourselves. We've still got a massive task in front of us, but yeah, my God, that would be so much fun.
It would, mate. It would. Especially that, the injury list that we've got at the moment is an absolute joke. The fact we've been able to balance this up to this point alone should be applauded, because not many teams do. A lot's made of Liverpool's injuries. A lot's made of whoever else's injuries. We've lost a lot of players. So I think it's important that is acknowledged. But guys, let us know your thoughts in the comment section down below on the game, on the draw as well. We would love to know your thoughts. If you're listening on Apple or Spotify, make sure you download, share with your friends, follow the podcast. If you're listening on YouTube, like, comment, subscribe, and up Villa.